Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. These are challenging times. Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7 at rocketmortgage.com. They're home to yours. The team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Thanks for being with us, everybody. Damon Amendolara here. Coming up this hour on the show, we have got a stunned to a news for you. We'll do that coming up in about 20 minutes from now. In 40 minutes, the Lance Armstrong documentary wrapped up last night with part two. I'll give you my thoughts on the entirety as a whole as a documentary and also what part two gave us, if any, answers. Also, 1 hour from now, we begin a brand new segment here on the show called DA's Favorite People in Sports. There are a number of people that I follow on social media, or I listen to on the radio, or I watch on television, that I really enjoy. And I thought it was a good week to highlight those people. It has been a combustible couple of days, volatile couple of days across the country. A lot of heartache, a lot of anger, a lot of intensity, emotional intensity. And while that rages and will continue to rage, and these are significant questions this country has to address and has put off for far too long, that we also highlight good here. And I want to highlight some of the people that I enjoy most in sports. So we'll start that today, coming up an hour from now, with Jim Murray, who is one of the hosts and update anchors at CBS Sports Radio's Boston affiliate, 98.5 The Sports Hub. I worked with him when I was there in Boston, and he's a remarkably funny guy, very deadpan, very cynical, and that's right up my alley. So we start off with a bang here. Jim's going to join us coming up 1 hour from now. So here's a report from over the weekend that gives you, for baseball fans, a pit in your stomach. Headline from CBSSports.com. Some baseball owners are perfectly willing to cancel the season. Oh, boy. According to Buster Olney, sources say there's a group of owners perfectly willing to shut down the season to slash payroll costs, reduce losses, and the differing views among the 30 teams have been reflected in the decisions to fire and furlough. Pirates ownership used the shutdown as an avenue to suspend team contributions to employee 401ks. Savings best measured monthly in the tens of thousands of dollars rather than the millions that would actually be making a difference. The Pirates are likely worth about $1 billion, and their ownership said, you know what? We're not going to contribute to employees' 401k plans. Yikes. For the A's, their ownership decided to eliminate $400 weekly salaries of minor leaguers. which according to Olney would be about the same amount as the team's unpaid stadium rental bill. So same as rent is what they saved in not paying minor leaguers. Now, we've seen other teams like the Tigers, the Padres, and the Royals who have stepped up and paid their minor leaguers. Now, this is an interesting piece from Buster Olney, and it happens just before we have the counterproposal from the players. And the baseball players have put forth a counterproposal for 114 games. They still want their prorated salaries, not to take anything more away from them because there's not going to be fans. They said, we still want, if we play half the season, 50% of our salaries. We want to play, though, 114 games. So that's closer to their full salaries. And their concessions are, well, we can expand the playoffs this year for more revenue for you and next year. And if we don't have the playoffs this year, so you don't get your playoff TV money, you can defer our biggest salaries. The salaries over $10 million, you won't have to pay right away. You can defer that payment since you won't have the postseason television contracts. Okay, that's a fair counterproposal, seemingly. I don't think the owners are going to take it. I don't know how reasonable it is to try to get 114 games in between June the 30th and Halloween and then a postseason after that. But, okay, counterproposal. Hopefully there's enough motivation to get something done this week so that there is another proposal from the owners, etc. I think there's one big thing that is staring me in the face of the owners from the owner standpoint. That is, how much do we trust that they'll lose money on this proposition if they don't ask another or get another salary cut from the players? Because this is the point of contention. It doesn't even seem here like the players are fighting this part anymore, that the owners had the right to come back to them if there were going to be no fans of the stands to ask for more money. You know, that's seemingly out the window now as part of the talking points of the players. The owners of the players got together in March when they had to suspend the season, and the players agreed to a prorated salary. So however many games we play is the percentage of our salaries. And we had heard, look, that's it. You can't take another haircut on us. You can't zap our pockets anymore. You can't take more money out of it. We're not even talking about that. But it seems though there was a clause in that where the owners are activated that, whereas, yeah, well, that was if there's fans. If there's no fans, we've got to renegotiate this. So it sounds like, to me, reading the tea leaves, that clause is in there for the owners to come back to the players, that it's not unfair to be asking for more. What I don't know if I can trust is if the owners can be believed that if we don't get more money out of the players, we're losing money on this deal. Because what the owners are trying to argue here is that at 60% of revenue, because we get 40% based on in-stadium attendance, parking, what have you. If it's just on TV, we only make 60% of our revenue. If we're only making 60% of the revenue, if we pay the players their salaries, we're losing money. And that's a tough sell for me. It really is. That's a tough sell for me. And that's what it comes down to when I read Buster Olney's report, to piece two things together. The owner saying, if we don't have fans in the seats, we lose money by paying you guys. So we'd rather just not play the season. And Olney's reports of some owners are, quote, perfectly willing to cancel the season. Well, I gotta believe, and this is just me piecing things together, I've gotta believe if owners are willing to cancel the season, it's because they are losing money on the proposition. I would imagine any owner that is gonna make profits on this season because of television money and no fans is going to say, well, I would rather make money on the season, even if it's a little bit of a profit, versus lose money. So I'd rather make money than have no income, than no season. You know what? Let's play the games. Let's have the season. If they are perfectly willing to cancel the season, it gives me a pit in my stomach, and here's why. Because I don't think that that is a bridge that can be crossed, because I don't think the players will ever trust the owners that they're truly losing money. And I don't believe the owners then really have the appetite for playing baseball this year. Instead, they want this as the way they change the economics of baseball. And if that's the case, then we're not just talking about no baseball this year. We're talking about another wave of an incredible, long, drawn out labor stoppage and fight for the next CBA, which is up a year from now. That's what it's telling me. If owners are, quote, more than willing or perfectly willing to cancel this season, some, that's what Olney says, then the players won't trust them, and we're going to have this whole thing done again because the owners are trying to restructure. I mean, if there's no fans in attendance and you're losing money, then you must feel like your business structure is out of whack. If you can't make a profit based on your television deal, which all these other sports, if it's basketball, if it's football, if they only played on TV and never had another fan in the stands, they'd still have a healthy business. I gotta believe baseball's the same way, unless their salaries, because they're paying $350 million to guys that might only make 30 starts a year, Gerrit Cole, that's so crazy and out of whack that it's not even worth it for us to do business this way anymore. But I find it hard to believe that the owners are in such financial peril already with billion-dollar valuations for their organizations that they're going to be a money loser if they have their televised games. That's hard for me to stomach, and I'm sure that's very hard for the players to stomach, and that feels like a... The old adage is the canary in the birdcage, the canary in the coal mine, rather. If that canary's dead now, or it's woozy, it's going to be dead when the next CBA comes up. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. When you saw the only report of owners being willing to cancel this season, Mraz, are you thinking, you know what, just negotiation ploy, or, this is bad?
How could you not think, this is bad, the way everything has gone here? I mean, this isn't, this is bad. The way it's dragged out publicly, it might be a negotiation ploy, but how could you trust baseball? We had a 94 strike. There's no trust there at all, and seeing the way the players have talked about it, so no, I am, of course, in the camp. This could be trouble, but to kind of piggyback off what you're talking about, the financial straits, I mean, as far as I ever knew, when professional sports franchises change hands and the deed change hands and ownership changes, I always remember stories about extreme background checks into financials, this, that, and the other. You're telling me that 1 year, all of a sudden these owners can't float anything, that we would be under this financial straits, that they would be in this kind of position with that loss of revenue there? I mean, how are the finances and whatever else they do besides baseball not backed enough to figure this out?
And how about the betterment of the game, where if the owners, let's just hypothetically said, okay, you know, we got to take a bath on $10 million this year. That's right. $10 million. It's a flat out $10 million loss this year.
Big bath.
The owners going, we still got to play the season because it's worse for us long term, and the health of the game, and the PR hit, and the sponsorships leaving. It's worse for us to not play at all. Let's just play and take the $10 million hit or $50 million hit. I mean, that to me seems like it should be the priority, which that's why this worries me. If owners are willing to ground this season out of economics, then all bets are off.
Yeah, and it's a little troubling in how public a fight this is, and I have yet to see, and correct me if I'm wrong, any member of any ownership group, and a lot of them are trying to keep us quiet, they're leaking a lot of stuff, or any of these players that have been vocal acknowledge the fact that revenue may not be the same going forward if you lose the season. You know, it's almost like assumed by the players, whether it's Trevor Bauer or Blake Snell, that don't matter to me, I'm not risking this, that, and the other thing. And they're not thinking like, oh yeah, we really could cost ourselves true revenue going forward. Like, they are leaning on the fans just to think everything here is okay and that they'll be back. And that scares me a little bit, if maybe they're just living in the moment and not thinking about it the way we're thinking about it in anger and frustration. But I'd like to see some acknowledgement of that from the players, if not the owners, just to say, we understand that this, that you guys might leave us. And it's like, just assume that fans will be there no matter what. And I think that's wrong.
Yeah, there hasn't been a lot of deferring to fans or what they think the fans would want right now. That's kind of been their own little bubble fight. Here's another thing that I thought was interesting from the players' proposal, that you can bail out on this season without penalty. And they said, if the, we want an option as players, where if we have an underlying health condition and we are scared of COVID, we can bail on the season, not play, and still get paid. Or if we don't, or if we have a family member that is a high-risk family member, we also can bail on the season and still get paid. If we bail on the season and we don't have a pre-existing condition nor a family member, basically a good excuse, then we won't get paid. But both are options. I am completely fine with a player bailing on the season and not getting paid for whatever reason, health reason, safety reason, anxiety reason, what have you. If you don't want to play this year, you don't feel comfortable going to work, I totally support it. You should have a guaranteed spot on the roster next year and you don't get paid, fine, all for it. I'm a little uncomfortable with the, okay, pre-existing health condition, totally get that. But if your family member is high risk, I mean, where do we start and stop the family members? You know, is it like your wife or kids? Okay. Is it your parents or grandparents? Wouldn't every player's parents or grandparents hypothetically qualify for high risk if they're over the age of like 65 or 75? I mean, where do you draw that line as a player? Because a player also for this season, if you really want to get paid, could be quarantined in your own hotel room. And for June 1 or July 1 until the end of your season, you just don't get to see your family, but you get paid. Look, that's an option a lot of people take in work, where if you're traveling and you're like, okay, honey, I won't see you for 4 months, but this is my salary. This is what gives us our life. You know, this is a part of life as well. I don't know. Where do you draw that line on family members?
I think it has to be your household. You have to make it known who lives in your house. And if your wife or your child, or perhaps you do live with a mother or a mother-in-law who has an underlying health condition, a respiratory problem, or anything that has been linked that we've seen so far to be a real problem when combining with coronavirus, I'm okay with paying those people, because I don't think it would be as many as you think. The problem you can't have is somebody taking advantage of the system and just not wanting to play because they don't want the shortened season and then going, giving my check anyway. Like, don't hurt the system. If you really have something going on at home, I don't think you could punish those players at all, and I think they should be paid.
Okay, so you would say it would have to be in your house.
Household. It can't be, like you said, your mother lives in a different house that you bought her. Like, the house that you're living in for the season, because a lot of these guys, you know, they come back and they move to whatever their markets are and play in season. Now, I'm not talking about your house back in Florida or Arizona if you don't play there. Whoever is in your household during this season, if they are anywhere near some kind of, you know, extra deal where this could be a problem with coronavirus, I think if they live in your house, you have the right to opt out of the season, to me. But they got to live in your house.
Well, how about if you just say, I've got kids, I don't want to expose my kids to coronavirus? And how many of these players have kids? I mean, I would have to imagine more than half of the players in the league have kids.
I mean, now we're getting real scientifical and the science and data. And
scientifical.
What is it? Scientific?
That is perfect.
Your point about where the line is drawn, I don't think simply saying I have kids and you don't have anybody with any underlying issues gives you the right to get paid then. I just don't because...
What about every player with an infant?
I have a hard time.
I'm saying this is to me. If
because
you
then you're,
want
to, you're determining children's ages. You know, like they have to have enough of an immune system.
Absolutely. And what I'm saying is, this is where to me it gets really sticky. If you don't want to play this season, you should not be punished, but you can't take a salary. I would hope that there's more players than not that want to compete to earn their salary. But how many players will go, you know what? I can get paid and not have to go out and play.
Yeah.
I'm going to take that out.
And then that's not fair to the players that are going out there and putting it on the line and who knows what they're coming to contact with while they're still getting the paycheck. It is a very sticky situation. But to me, it should just be the obvious ones that live in your house where you don't even have to think about it. It should be a no-brainer. We get this. And I bet you it is not that many of them that it would come to that.
When we come back, we are stunned to a news and a huge Sunday in the Amendolara household. The Bourbon Bell cut my hair. We'll talk about it next. The DA Show, CBS Sports Radio.
Good value, big upside.
Thanks so much. Keep it going.
You too, DA. And I love that website you have where I can watch the show wherever I'm at.
I appreciate you saying that. WatchDA.com, available on any device.
Including my phone.
That's right. Thank you, Zuck.
You bet.
Adam Zucker joining us this morning on the show. See, that's a nice plug for WatchDA.com.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
You can watch at WatchDA.com. You can also watch inside the Radio.com app. Watch us live every single morning right here on the DA Show. And think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. Don't forget, you can submit and ask a question by going to CBSSportsRadio.com or simply tweeting at me, DA on CBS. And also our toll-free line is 855-212-4227. Sponsored by Geico. Geico has introduced the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current to new customers that last your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. Standing by with our headlines this morning is our good friend Brad Heller, also a dessert coordinator. Brad Heller, any good desserts this weekend to note?
Well, DA, my mom, actually, I got to see my mom. She made me these gluten-free, which I'm not always a supporter of, but these were gluten-free chocolate chip peanut butter cookies. I don't even know. They were soft, and they were delicious. So
that sounds great.
Yeah, yeah.
And she, okay, you know, now, why are you not a proponent of gluten-free sometimes?
Well, you know, the taste is not always the same. I mean, I am a gluten supporter. Let's put it that way. I mean, I'll
okay,
have
you're
gluten-free.
Pro-gluten.
I am pro-gluten. I am.
Okay.
But these were exceptionally good and a huge big bag. So you just leave them in the kitchen anytime you walk by. You know, I'm popping them like I'm popping baby M&Ms. You know?
Oh, that's amazing. Now, Mraz, I know that you're usually very pro-gluten as well, but I know that you can dig into a little gluten-free Tate's chocolate chip cookies every so often and enjoy them.
The Tate's is the perfect flat crispness to a cookie and the perfect little salt crunch as well. I've made a turn. There are a lot of gluten-free dessert products I've been introduced to that I didn't even know if I'd miss gluten. There is a great – I mean, I think the Girl Scout Cookie of the Year was gluten-free. That's how I would have voted it. And
wow.
My sister's baked some gluten-free stuff in the past now. And look – you can make a pretty good dessert without gluten. I can't do the no pasta, but desserts I can survive with no gluten.
Have you tried gluten-free pasta, Mraz?
I have. It's not for me. I can tell the difference. It's not. I still would have a lot of trouble functioning in society without gluten dinner products. I could get by on the gluten desserts. Gluten dinners I need.
Okay. All right, Brad Heller, headlined this morning. What do we have?
All right, DA, we'll start with Major League Baseball. The Players Association making its counterproposal to the owners. They want 114 games for the season, up from the 82 the owners are asking for. It would start June 30th and go to October 31st. No additional pay cuts, as we expected, but the union is willing to defer salary up to $100 million if the postseason is canceled, should there be a second wave of the coronavirus. Players are concerned about the virus, of course, and in this proposal, there'd be an opt-out for players to sit out the season. They would still get their service time. Those considered high risk or living with somebody high risk would still get paid, and no pay for those that sit out who are not considered high risk. Owners aren't going to go for more games because they'll just lose more money with no fans in the seats, especially if the players refuse any more pay cuts. DA, you talked yesterday to New York Newsday columnist David Lennon here on the show.
This is a numbers thing. I mean, the losses here are real. You know, when you talk about owners who would rather just not play the games, you know, to prevent further losses, that's real. You know, when you talk about the players demanding they want to get, they feel like they've given up enough of a pay cut already and losing half of their salaries for this season, that's real.
We're hearing that the two sides would have to agree to some sort of deal in the next week to start by July 4th, but now the players want opening day even before that if they're going to play 32 more games. TMZ Sports obtained video of former NBA guard J.R. Smith beating up a man who allegedly damaged his truck during the protests in L.A. over the death of George Floyd. Smith is seen kicking and punching him before the man, who was white, runs away. Smith justified the beating on social media and said it was not a hate crime. A statement from Michael Jordan yesterday, among the many in the NBA community to respond to the death of Floyd and the ensuing protests across the country. Jordan's statement reads that he's deeply saddened, truly pained, and plain angry. He says he stands with those that are calling out the ingrained racism, and he asks for peaceful expressions against injustice and demands accountability. Celtics guard Jaylen Brown led a peaceful protest in Atlanta over the weekend. He made a 15-hour drive from Boston to Georgia for this protest. He is from Marietta. The College Football Hall of Fame is in Atlanta. That was damaged by protesters this weekend. CEO Kimberly Bowden tells the AP most of the damage was to the exterior. Merchandise was stolen from the gift shops and broken glass ended up in one of the exhibition areas. But otherwise, Bowden said that they're very thankful the most valuable trophies and artifacts have been moved to a secure facility. This report sponsored by Geico. Geico has introduced the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers that lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. And now,
it doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
So LaTanya Lark and her brother Kevin Grant were out for a drive. They were running some errands in Savannah, Georgia on the Harry S. Truman Parkway when something smashed into their windshield. LaTanya Lark told CNN she thought it was a brick. It wasn't a brick. It was actually a turtle. A turtle. A real live turtle smashed into the front windshield and actually got lodged into the windshield. Glass shattered everywhere. It actually landed on Kevin Grant, who was sitting in the passenger seat. The glass did, I mean. He was okay. The turtle was actually taken to an animal hospital. It was alive at the time. Unfortunately, it did not survive because of blood loss, which we are very sad about. LaTanya told CNN it sounded like a bomb went off. She said, as I mentioned, she thought it was a brick. It was a turtle. Police don't know how the turtle was somehow vaulted in the air and crashed into a windshield. I can't even fathom how that's possible. Even if it was hit by another car, how a turtle would somehow get air and angle into another car into the windshield.
But cowabunga, dude.
Seriously. Yeah, maybe it was a ninja turtle. Who knows? But real-life proof of Michelangelo and Leonardo doing good things, or bad things, I guess, in this case, in the state of Georgia.
Well, Michelangelo is a party dude, and you could just imagine flying through the air, fighting Shredder, one of the foot soldiers, and then smashing right into the windshield. You should see the picture of this. This is crazy. The turtle is about, I don't know, maybe 8 inches wide or so, and it's kind of like a shot put, and it's just embedded in the windshield. Half the turtle is coming through the windshield. Half the turtle is outside. It's just embedded in the windshield. They said they brought this turtle to the hospital, but unfortunately it had lost too much blood. Now, this is what's amazing. The woman who was driving said, quote, "The turtle got cited, but of course he didn't have insurance and he couldn't get a lawyer, so I wound up having to pay a deductible and everything." I don't know if that's the most unintentionally hysterical line ever, or is she saying that seriously? He didn't have insurance and he couldn't get a lawyer, so I paid the deductible. But this story is amazing. Yeah, how does the turtle get launched into the air? And if you've seen a decent-sized turtle, that coming into your windshield is scary. That's like a that's like a shot put coming through.
She thought it was an alien. If it wasn't a brick, maybe it was an alien, because then the legs came out as it smashed into the windshield, and obviously
the legs. Turtle was. How terrifying would that be if something hit your windshield? You have to pull over, and then you see legs coming out of the thing that hit your windshield.
Oh,
my goodness.
For the record, Michelangelo would be the one mutant Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle that wouldn't have a driver's license, so therefore no insurance. So
he was the least responsible of the Ninja Turtles,
no
I would
question.
Say.
But no
Leonardo
question.
Or Donatello would probably be the ones that would have the insurance and the driver's license.
Designated driver, if you will.
All right, thank you, Heller.
All right.
This is a great stunt to a news. Turtle falls through. Flies through your windshield. That apparently they're thinking that the turtle got hit by another car in front of them. So this turtle gets hit by another car, skids up, flies through the air, and then crashes through their windshield. That's a hell of a day for the turtle.
That is a rough way to go. You don't hear many of these turtle deaths, if you will. And I'm a little disappointed in the animal hospital. We don't have any turtle blood donors that could have been able to try help to save this turtle that was died of all this blood loss.
Well, there was a problem. See, there was a large man waiting in line with a cut hand in front of the turtle, and so they couldn't get to the turtle in time.
It should be noted on animal hospital stories. Yeah, there was a man we used to work with that needed an animal hospital to save his hand.
Yeah.
And yet there was a chimpanzee we talked about last week that went to a regular hospital, a human hospital, for hypothermia. So really, all bets are off on who belongs in regular hospitals and who belongs in animal hospitals.
I'll see your Schwartz and raise you a Schwartz.
Yeah, the Schwartz of Savannah, Georgia was hogging up the entire ER at the vet, and this turtle couldn't get its help.
Took all the calls.
So a huge day at the Amendolara household yesterday, a huge day. Mraz, you know, my pseudo-Aunt Kathy, she's really a family friend, not related to any of us, but we call her our aunt because she's been a longtime family friend. And she cuts my hair. She's actually a professional hairstylist, so I always get my hair cut from her. And, of course, now during quarantine, I can't go see Kathy anymore. So she says, well, you want to do it over Zoom, FaceTime. So I say, sure. She goes, okay, this is what you need to get. You got to get this length comb, this type of bristles. You got to have this length of a scissor and a buzzer. I had the buzzer, didn't have the scissors to cut hair, didn't have the full length comb she wanted. So I ordered them on Amazon. So they came last week. And I had to find a day where the Bourbon Belle could cut my hair. So yesterday was the day. So we set up a 10 a.m. phone call, FaceTime call on the deck. So I'm out of the deck. We prop up my phone on the tripod that I use for my Nomad videos. Okay. And Kathy is now talking to us video conferencing as the Bourbon Belle has the scissors and the buzzer and the comb. Oh. And Kathy is walking her through cutting my hair. Now, Kathy is a Lower East Side girl. She has the thickest Italian New York accent of ever. You've met her before. She enjoys her wine. She enjoys her cigars. She is a classic New York City chick that is a no-nonsense chick, which is why I love her so much. So her teaching my wife how to cut my hair on the deck over FaceTime was peak quarantine for me. This was the highest form of quarantine. And there were times where it was a, I could tell, I couldn't see what my hair looked like, but I could tell Kathy was like, ooh. And Bourbondale was like, ah. And okay, well, we could fix that or we could do that. And I'm just thinking, oh God, this is, how is this going to go? But I was trying to be a good soldier here. I wasn't squirming. I wasn't complaining. I wasn't telling anybody. I just shut my mouth, happy that I was going to have my hair cut enough. And lo and behold, done with it. Vacuum up all the hair clippings. Go take a shower. And you saw me yesterday over our teleconference during the Sunday show. And my hair was all over the place because it had no product in it. And I just come out of the shower. Today, I would say I'm looking clean. I'm looking good. Yesterday, big, big win in the Amendo household.
I would say so. Looking at you today, you look normal. Now, yesterday, again, you said no product, and I didn't know about this haircutting story yesterday when I saw you. I literally typed you. I said, dude, what the heck happened to your hair? It looked like you would come off surfing for 12 hours, and it was just all all up and around. But, I mean, I'm looking at you now, and again, I don't know the full-on details of where everything had to be snipped and this, that, and the other, but your hair looks like you. You look like what I remember you looking like when we were allowed to see each other in person. And for that, it's good, because you, like Bogish, I don't know what is with you guys. You guys have very similar hair, except he's balding a little more than you. You guys had both
been growing. He is balding. I'm not.
All right. There's no need to take shots at Bogish when he's
not
here.
I'm just saying.
I mean, I was trying to be fair to him. But you guys both had this like one long hair that would somehow sprout off the rest of it and fold over your forehead. And it was like it was growing like a weed vine that was trying to tickle your retina. And you both had the same thing. Like on different days, you'd be looking like, there's Bogus with that one loose hair. There's DA with the one loose hair. Everything is tidied up and you don't have any stragglers looking to escape the scalp here. And I have to say, for a fine woman like your wife is, for her ability to make candles and now be able to cut hair, I mean, she's a Renaissance woman. She really is.
I actually trusted her with this task because she's relatively artistic. And I think you have to have a good set of hands to be able to maneuver around. No, really. You know,
so she can recover an onside kick and cut hair. She's on the hands team.
No. She'd be on the hands team. Yes. because she's done, you know, she was in design for so long. So she knows how to draw a lot of design stuff and stuff to scale and things. So I know that she's good with her hands. I don't know if I would trust my wife or family member that wasn't able to, you know, be relatively, you know, good hand-eye coordination with how they can draw and how they can use utensils or tools or what have you. Because then, you know, you could get a real clumsy cut. What ended up happening was, really, you just have to cut the sides. You have to, basically, where everybody's getting really weirded out is we all look like Doc Brown now coming out of the DeLorean because our side hair is growing around our ears.
Yes.
And so that's where if you've got hair, it's just getting really crazy behind and we all look like Gila monsters or something with hair coming out from all of our sides. So she just really cleaned up sideburns, hair behind the ear, hair around the ear, trimmed up my neck, and that's enough. So as a little tip to people looking to have maybe their own haircuts in home, don't worry about what's on top. You just have to get the crazy hair that's around the ears so we don't look like Doc Brown anymore.
And every barber that went to barbering school is now yelling at you, it's not just about the ears. Stop discrediting how easy it is to do our job.
No. I don't want to take away from barbers, hairstylists, what have you. You guys are geniuses. No, seriously. Like, I don't know how we could all go on as a society if we did not have haircuts. But if you're looking for a DIY do-it-yourself, don't try to mess up the top of the hair because it could really get ugly there. You're just looking for a round. Like, my dad hasn't had a haircut probably in 3 months. It's crazy. Papa Mendo, his hair is all over the place. I mean, it's just coming out from all sides now.
My dad is more matted than the dog. He's just pressing it with that food counter Yankee hat every day and just hoping you don't notice.
Would you trust Danielle with cutting your hair?
No, I would not. I would not. If I still had hair, I would not. Because one time I trusted her with cleaning my ears, and she almost poked my brain out to the point I was in tears for 45 minutes.
Oh, no. Punctured eardrum?
So she just went a little too deep, and then it happened to be like I just tilted my head at the right time, and it went
like
in. DA, I was in tears. I'm telling you, like, it took me 40 to 45 minutes to compose myself once, and I still bring it up to this day. You know, my wife is big on, like, the zit popping and stuff. She thinks she's, like, pimple popper MD. You know, run up, try to squeeze a pimple off you. And always, like, I am petrified when she comes near me with those hands. Stay away. You almost killed me once.
When we come back here on the show, did the Lance documentary part two give us any answers? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Good value, big upside.
It's the great Phil Simms, Super Bowl champion and NFL analyst, of course.
I'm happy to be part of the NFL. I love the game. I love watching all the games. Of course, I can't predict games worth a crap, but I can tell you something about them.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Remember that the DA show is available on your smart speaker, so every morning get ready with us by telling your smart speaker to play CBS Sports Radio and wake up and get your day began. Begun with the DA show, 6 until 10 Eastern Time, 3 until 7 Pacific. So last night, Lance Armstrong's documentary, Lance, we had part two of the two-part series, and it was 2 hours each part, so a total of 4 hours. And overall, I found it to be disappointing. There were some things in it that were interesting. And Lance Armstrong makes a really fascinating personality study. But I fear the same thing happened with this as happened with Michael Jordan's Last Dance. Too much creative control allowed to Lance Armstrong. I don't know if Lance had final say like Michael seemingly did with The Last Dance. The Michael Jordan documentary was incredible theater, but it was very obvious. Whatever Michael said, they were not going to counter nor challenge. And I think that Michael had editorial final rights on things. So either they didn't challenge him because they knew it wouldn't make it, or they challenged anything about it and he cut it out. For Lance, there are clear moments where they are kind of highlighting the type of aggressive, narcissistic, vindictive type of person that he is, the win at all costs, the happy to lie, the comfortable lying of him. But there's also moments in it where you go, boy, this guy's a psychopath and he's a bad dude. And they kind of doll it up and dress it up as that's what everybody was doing. And remember, the charity's still really good. And Livestrong raised a lot of money and changed cancer forever. And don't forget that part. And I was like, I don't know if that's the right tenor here. I mean, Lance lashes out and is very angry at some people formerly in his life or how he's been treated. He thinks he's been unfairly treated, that he was kind of one of the guys that had to take the fall while other guys had been propped up. And he notes this by the end that in these different countries, in Spain, in Italy, in the U.S., one guy takes the fall and becomes the pariah, and the other guys who have also cheated actually end up being embraced. And he feels that it was unfair that he was the pariah, even though there are times over the course of the movie that he admits that he was a bad guy. But he never really can get to full contrition. It is disappointing because there's so much Lance Armstrong interview in this. It is so fully a documentary about Lance today. I mean, he's 80% of this is his quotes today. That the fact that he can't get to actual apologies and real sincere contrition about bullying people in his life that were called him out, that he was going to run the truck over and sue for defamation, even though he was the one lying and he was the one doping. He never quite gets there. He doesn't ever quite understand what he did. And because he can't go there, it just leaves you feeling so flat, like we just watched 4 hours of a guy that still can't quite come to the truth. And it's 80% of those 4 hours is about him not being able to come to the truth. And so, you know, there's little things in there that are just kind of left that you go, well, what's going on here? His son plays football at Rice. He speaks to the team. There's a team meeting, and Lance Armstrong is there to give kind of a rah-rah speech. He cites his son by the wrong jersey number. He's like, and I know, you know, how much work you guys put in because, you know, I know number 48's putting in the work. Talking about his son. His son comes up to him afterwards and goes, just so you know, Dad, I wear number 35. He goes, you do? He goes, yeah, I've worn number 35. Really? I thought you were 48. No, I'm 35. Huh. Okay. Now, if that's not some insight into Lance Armstrong's bizarre parenting, his kind of aloofness with his wives and his girlfriends and his whole, all the inner workings of his teams and his teammates, it's right there, and it's just kind of left for, you want to ask Lance, like, how do you forget your son's football jersey number? Come on! What's going on?
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.